Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. This hour of the program, Spelling. We had the Badger State Spelling Bee competition this past Saturday, and the Scripps National Championships are going on now in schools all over the country. Evidently, there are about 11 million young people who participate in spelling bees in their schools. So we figured it was a good time to talk about spelling, which, when you think about it, is a rather unusual thing to be able to spell. And we all know people who are really wonderful spellers. Think of all of those people who are 10, 11, 12 years old who can spell words you never even heard of at the Scripps National Spelling Bee competition. Other people who can't spell very well. So what makes a good speller, and why are some people not very good spellers? Is there a genetic component to this? And interestingly, we will have one of the winners of the Scripps National Spelling Bee competition. He won in 2008 at the age of 13, has just graduated from Columbia University, and so we will talk about how in the world these young people can spell some of these words, how we prepared for it. Should be an interesting hour, and we're also, during the course of this hour, probably a little bit later on, we're going to have a little contest. We have very few of those, but we have a word that was one of the words that was used in the Scripps Spelling Bee competition some time ago. We are going to give it to you. We are going to give you the pronunciation of the word a couple times, and we'll give you the origin, right? We'll give you the origin of the word, too. And you might win a prize. How often does that happen? We have two guests with us. Professor Brenda Rapp starts off the hour, a professor of cognitive science at Johns Hopkins University. And her work is in furthering our understanding of the cognitive processes and the neural substrates that support written and spoken word production and comprehension. She has thought an awful lot about spelling, and she has done work researching spelling performance in the brain and in the brains of stroke patients. A little bit later on, Samir Mishra will join us. He won the National Spelling Bee competition in 2008. And we'll be welcoming phone calls. How do we teach spelling? How did you learn spelling? Do you find yourself, I know this happens to me occasionally, some word you've spelled forever in your life, and all of a sudden you can't remember how to spell the word? Here's how you reach us for this conversation. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. And we thank you so much, Professor Rapp, for being with us. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Are you a good speller?
I'm a pretty good speller, yes.
Are you? Have you always been?
I have.
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I'm probably not as good as I used to be. I forget some words and how they're spelled. But so were you born that way?
I don't know.
But you of all people should know, right?
I have to be honest, though, also, right? We don't really know the answer to that question, which is, I think, the question you're probably most interested in. You know, some people wonder whether we have a gene for spelling or
right.
A gene for reading. And so we really think that we don't have that. And that's because written language, reading and spelling, are really recent human inventions. So this was only invented 5,000 years ago, and not large proportions of the population have been spelling for that long. So there's been no time really to influence our human genome to develop really genes for spelling.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unlikely that we have genes that are specifically for spelling, but we probably have genes for precursor skills for spelling. And it's possible that some people have genes that build, you know, stronger precursor skills than others. And then that gives them an advantage then when these skills are then, you know, recruited for spelling when they get to school and they have to figure out how to spell, you know, and do something that they weren't genetically designed to do. They have to use these precursor skills to do it.
What do you mean by precursor skills?
Yeah, so these are skills that we have some reason to think that our, you know, genetic code might actually program for, but that aren't specifically for spelling. So these might be skills that have to do with how you use your spatial attention, like paying attention to details, and the way you remember spatial information. So remembering, you have to remember in for spelling words, you have to remember, you know, where the letters are and what order they're in and what's different about a lowercase b and a lowercase d, for example. So these visual skills and these attention skills and these memory skills and your general language skills are things that our genetic code does, you know, design us to do. And so we reading and spelling require sort of cobbling together these skills and building on them to build new skills of reading and spelling.
Mm. You know, I can't even remember if there were special units in English that taught you spelling. I don't know how I learned spelling or how we learn spelling and all of the rules that are all stuck in our head somewhere.
Yeah, well, there are probably two ways. One is really kind of by osmosis. You know, you when you read words, so we read lots of words that we haven't been specifically taught to spell, and yet sometimes when we're called upon to spell them, not always, but sometimes when we're called upon to spell them, we have no trouble spelling them. And so presumably when we're reading, we're storing in memory all these patterns that we see. So we're very good. This is a general human skill at storing patterns. And so part of it comes in that way. We're not even thinking about it. We're just storing it. But kids are also taught very explicitly, you know, that these letters and these letter combinations make certain sounds, and they're taught word families and how they're spelled and how they sound. So there's a combination of both, some of the automatic pattern learning that we do and then some specific learning that's done in school. And then, of course, we all, at least in American schools, we all practice doing spelling bees. So we practice committing to memory the spellings of particularly tricky, where tricky means sort of unpredictable words. So we practice that way also.
And there are a lot of those, aren't there, in our language?
There are a lot of them in English. So English is sort of infamous for the number of words where you can't just figure out how to spell them if you just know how letters and sounds map onto each other. So languages that have very predictable spellings, we call we say they have transparent orthography. And languages like English where you know, for many words or parts of words, you know, like yacht, who would know there's a CH in there, or, you know, colonel in the military title, who would know there's an L and an O
right
in there? You can't hear them. So English has a lot of words that because English is considered to be opaque. And so these have to really be committed to memory.
Mm-hmm. So is it true then the more you read, the more likely you are to be a good speller?
There certainly is a strong relationship between reading and spelling. Like I said, you know, we are able to spell words that we never specifically practice spelling. And presumably that's at least some of them. It's because we've seen them and, you know, read them and stored their letters in memory. So there is a strong relationship, and good readers tend to be good spellers. But as you probably know, as everybody knows, there are some people who are excellent readers and seem to be really struggle with spelling. So it seems like reading and spelling share some of the same brain machinery, and so when you practice one, you practice the other because they share some of the same parts of the brain machine, but they also have their own special parts. And so those are the parts that you really need to develop, specifically the reading parts for reading and the spelling parts for spelling.
Hmm. Do you think that we're still concerned about spelling?
We're less concerned about spelling, aren't we? Yeah, we're having spell checkers. Yep. Mm-hmm. So there, I often run into people, you know, who say, "Oh, why should we care about spelling? You know, you just write something approximately right, you know, and the spell checker will fix it for you." So I think that there is an attitude probably pretty prevalent about being less concerned. Before, it was a real mark of, you know, education to be able to spell well.
And yes.
That's less, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that spell checker drive you nuts, though, at times? It takes what you've spelled, and it gives you, it's trying to, I guess, change your thought, too. It not only changes the spelling, it gives you a whole new word, and you wonder, where the heck did this come from?
Exactly. It's pretty hilarious, too. Yeah, you can find very funny.
I know.
Yeah.
I know that you are also doing work with people who have strokes. What's the relationship between the studying of spelling and the studying of the brains of people who have had strokes?
Yeah. So in order to be able to help anybody who's having trouble with something, so let's say you're having trouble with spelling because you've had a stroke and it's damaged that part of your brain that's involved in spelling, or let's say you're a child who has what's called developmental dysgraphia, so this is like developmental dyslexia, but for spelling, where you're bright and you're good at all kinds of things, but you just really can't, you know, learn to spell. So you're having trouble. So in order to help people like that, we would need to understand, well, what's really wrong with them? You know, it's like there's a spelling machine, and it has lots of parts. We know that it has lots of parts, like a car has lots of parts. In order to fix a car, you need to be able to understand how a car works. So in order to be able to help someone who either, you know, lost some spelling because of a stroke or lost some of their spelling or never learned it because of some developmental problem, in order to help them, we need to understand how the brain actually does spelling in the normal situation. How does it work? What are all the parts? How do they work together? And so by studying people who've had strokes, I can study how the machine breaks down. And that gives me a window into what the different machine parts are and how they work together. And based on that, then, we can develop better therapies.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And what about when you're very young and you're learning spelling? We've all had letters from young people, and we kind of laugh at the way they spell certain words. Is spelling a kind of thing you want to be right on it right away? So if somebody makes a mistake, you say, no, that's not how you spell letter. It's got two T's, not two D's.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think you want to be on it right away. I think that so we really have two kinds of knowledge of spelling that we use in spelling. We know this, and it's organized differently in the brain. So we know about the spellings of specific words that we've memorized, like yacht and colonel, and even a word like once. You know that O is not. Why is there an O in once?
Right.
Even a very common word like that. So there's a part of our brain that memorizes spelling, stores them in memory just the way they are, and we have to do that for a lot of words. But there's another part of our brain that learns about how sounds and letters are associated with each other, so that when you hear a word like yacht for the first time, you might spell it Y-A-T, for example, right? Or that Y-O-T. That might be a very, and you're using, you never spelled it that way before. You never saw it. You never saw anybody write Y-O-T, but you know about sounds and letters and how they map onto each other. Right, and so that's another part of our brain. It's part of our spelling system. And so young kids very often are using that part of their brain to write letters, L-E-T-E-R, for example. And so it's good to have that, you know, those skills. Those are really important skills for spelling. And we all use those skills when we encounter names we've never heard before. So, you know, if you heard I was Dr. Rapp, you know, you didn't see it written, well, you wouldn't know how it was spelled. It could be R-A-P, R-A-P-P, W-R-A-P. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you could spell it. So you have to have that skill of knowing how sounds, and you can't just be limited to spelling the words that you know.
Right.
You have to have this sort of this toolkit that allows you to spell words you've never heard before. And that's what the children are doing when they are, you know, applying these skills. So I think they should be, you know, rewarded for coming up with a good spelling, something that's reasonable. And, you know, that would be a great way to spell letter, and you could just leave it at that. Or if, depending on where they are, you could say, that would be a great way to spell it. But, you know, it turns out that the way we actually spell it is a little different. We spell it with two T's. So I think they need to realize that what they're doing is a good thing, but they also have to learn eventually that that's not exactly how we do it in English.
And Dr. Rapp, is there a certain part of our brain that is associated with spelling?
Yeah. There are multiple parts of our brain because the spelling system is actually complex. It's like a machine with multiple parts. And so different brain areas are used. These different parts are in different brain areas. And these brain areas are if you're a right-hander, they're almost always in the left hemisphere, the left side of your brain.
Oh.
So spelling is very left hemisphere-based in right-handers, and we just don't study left-handers as well, so I don't really know what the data are there. And the spelling areas are near areas that are used for other, what we call evolutionarily older skills. So we have a spelling area that's near spoken language area. We have another spelling area that's near an area that we use for recognizing visual things, visual objects, and another one that's near an area that we use for paying attention to certain locations in the environment and so on. So it looks like what the brain has done is it's used this older machinery that we have genes to develop, and it's kind of repurposed it, taken parts of it over, you know, for spelling specifically.
Isn't it something when you watch these, we're going to have one of the winners of the Scripps Spelling Bee Championship on with us in a moment. I watch those every year, and I'm thinking maybe you know the answer to this, Dr. Rapp. How in the world do they know? Do they just have phenomenal memorization abilities, or is there something going on that's incredibly unique in their brains? What is it?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, and I haven't studied them. So
they
really,
I
don't know anybody who has. So if you interview any of these, you know, young folks, and you can be sure to tell them that I would, and if they're interested, I would love to work with them because they really have not been studied. And so you are right that there's these sort of two kind of hypotheses, right? One is that they are doing something really different than the rest of us. And the other one is that they're doing what the rest of us do, but kind of on steroids. They've really built up these parts of their brain through practice. They probably have strong precursor skills. So these skills that, you know, we then build on to turn into spelling machinery, they probably have strong precursor skills to begin with, I would imagine. And then, of course, they practice them and build them up and rehearse a lot. But it's also possible that they do that and also have some special machinery that they develop. And I'd love to put them in an fMRI scanner and scan their brains while they're spelling, which is what I do, and see what we see.
All right. Well, we'll try to link you with the person who's coming on after you who won one of these. That would be a really great thing. We're welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about spelling this hour of the program, what it is that makes for a great speller, why some people don't spell very well at all, what we can learn from people who have lost the ability to spell in a large measure and who have lost some cognitive ability, stroke patients. And our guest is Dr. Brenda Rapp. Doctor of Cognitive Science at Johns Hopkins University. Her work includes researching spelling performance in the brain and also in the brains of stroke patients. How did you learn to spell? Do you think it's important when you get a letter from somebody and there are a lot of misspellings in it, do you tend to be rather judgmental about the person before you've even met him or her because the spelling isn't very good? What do you think about this spell checker? Do you watch this spelling bee competition, which is coming up at the end of May and Saturdays, just took place in the state of Wisconsin, the Spelling Bee Championship? We'll meet one of the winners, very young winner. He's now out of college, but he won the Scripps Championship in 2008, and he had an interesting way of going about learning words, like memorizing the dictionary. That's no small task. Our phone number, join our conversation. Oh, and we have a contest coming up, too. We're going to ask you, the first person to correctly spell a word will get a prize. That will be fun. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show, and we have lines open for you right now as we talk about spelling. This is the Ideas Network. All right, let's go to phone calls, and we go to Jane in Osseo first. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got just a couple comments, and a funny story. I learned how to swipe. You know what that is, right?
Yes.
When you swipe. Well, because of spell check, instead of telling my beloved nephew that I started swiping, I told him I started stripping.
Oh, no.
And and I'm sure that happens to a lot of people. I guess one of my question is then, is with all the spell check on every device we own, is that going to perhaps slow down the challenge and the competitions of spelling, let's say 10, 15 years from now because of spell check?
Dr. Rapp.
Oh, it's a question for me.
Yes.
It may very well do that. It's certainly a worry for those of us who love spelling. But I think it's also a worry because, as we mentioned before, there is an intimate relationship between reading and spelling. So I think that the less we're spelling and sort of the less strong our you know, we store the spelling of words in our brain, we have to store them really carefully for spelling, and the less well we do that, I think it will, have some impact on the speed with which we can read and read, words and, quickly and in different kind of contexts. So I worry about that.
Hmm. What about the relationship? I've heard this before. Maybe you can tell us if it's true, that if you're reading an article and you're taking notes on it, you don't do it with a typewriter, which shows where I'm with a computer. If you do it in a handwritten fashion, taking notes on something, you're more likely to remember it. I'm wondering if that's true, and does that then mean that if you are trying to remember words and how to spell words, if you're just doing a list, that you should write them down and see them, that that's related somehow to the whole process of memory?
Yeah, so The research on taking notes, doing handwritten notes versus doing typing up notes, seems to be pretty solid. So it's been replicated in different labs that people seem to remember content better if they write it out rather than just, you know, typing the notes as they're listening to the lecture. Now, why that is what we don't really know. So we don't know if it's something about the motor act of handwriting, actually move, you know, making those shapes, or if it's because of the speed that you do when you're handwriting. It's a little bit slower, so you may be paying more attention to the content as you're doing it than when you're typing. So the reason why there's a benefit is what we don't understand.
Hmm. Thanks, Jane, for the call, and carry on with the stripping. Let's go to Darby, Darby in Elm Grove. Hi, Darby.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I can ask a million questions, but my question is, I have a dyslexic child. How or does this interfere with her spelling? She's only in second grade, so I'm figuring this all out. But I'm very curious as to how this will interfere with her spelling.
Right. So I understand that concern. There are lots of different forms that dyslexia take. So you may have realized this, that your child may not be the same as other children that have dyslexia. And that's because the reading, the machinery that we use for reading is very complicated. It has many different parts, and dyslexia can come about from difficulties in developing different of those parts, and so different children may have different specific problems in reading. And that relates to whether or not you can expect them to have spelling problems. So overall, most children that are classified as dyslexic do tend to have spelling problems. So overall, you would probably expect for her to also have some difficulty in learning spelling. But it does depend on really why she's having her reading problems. And she could be having her reading problems for reasons that won't affect her spelling. And so that's why I have to qualify that answer a little bit.
Does visual therapies help with that?
It may. If her problem is on the visual end of reading, then the visual therapy might help with the reading. And as I said before, we gain a lot of the information about spelling, a lot of the knowledge that we have from our reading. So then to the extent to which you improve the reading, you'll also improve the spelling.
So you are a proponent of the visual therapies, because there are a lot of people and professionals in optometry and others that believe that is absolutely no basis, has any impact on a child whatsoever.
Well, I am a big believer that the reading process, it's like a machine that has many different parts, and they all have to develop. And different children may have problems in developing different parts of that machine. So some children will have trouble developing the visual parts of the machinery. Other children will have trouble developing more the sound-based parts of the machinery, and so on. So it depends on which part of the machinery of reading your child is having trouble with. If they're really having trouble developing the visual parts, then absolutely visual type of therapy makes sense. If they're having trouble developing some sound-based part of the reading machinery, then visual therapy wouldn't make sense. So it's important to understand exactly what the underlying problems are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like crossing the midline.
Like crossing the midline?
Like she has difficulty with crossing the midline?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's just too little information for me to go on. We really need to, look at her more carefully, evaluate her and see, and to better understand where the reading problems are coming from. So I really encourage you, if you haven't already done that, to get a very thorough evaluation of the reading, and with the idea in mind to understand which specific parts of the process she's having trouble with and which she's not having trouble with.
Thanks,
Derby.
And
focus the therapy on that.
Cherise in Central Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. I'm a reading volunteer with a young woman who has low reading level and also has some difficulty with spelling. And I'm wondering what would be some good strategies to try and help her improve her spelling. Obviously, she's a young woman, so perhaps different than working with young children.
I think that, again, it depends a little bit on why she's having trouble in spelling. We use different approaches depending on what the problem is, whether she has trouble memorizing the spellings or she can memorize them but then has trouble getting them out, all the letters out and in the right order. So it depends a little bit. It depends quite a bit. But in general, when working with older folks, I think it's important to work on vocabulary that's relevant to them. So you want to find words that are useful to them in their everyday life, as opposed to just working on words that are in some child's spelling book, because that'll really increase the motivational component. These are words that they really want to learn. And then you will need to find a variety of different ways to have this young woman practice those words and really understand what the letters are, what their order is, rearrange them, copy them, write them, present them with some letters missing that they need to put in. They really need to have this sort of intimate appreciation of the letters of a word and how they're ordered with respect to one another, and a lot of practice with mm-hmm. words that she cares about.
Thanks so much for the call. Two more quick phone calls. James in Northbrook. Hi, James.
Hello.
Hi.
I've struggled with spelling, and I do read a lot. I'm a mechanical engineer, and it's pretty common engineers don't know how to write very well. I figured out that I'm a very visual type of person. I love taking pictures, and I visualize things. My younger years, I won science fairs and everything, and actually come up with a number of inventions through my life, and have done quite well professionally. However, my writing and spelling is awful. Mm. However, I have good communication skills.
Mm-hmm, I can see that.
And I've had teachers that have done everything they can, and it was so funny. I remember my eighth grade teacher told me, you will have a secretary that will do your spelling. Just continue your science. And I even have trouble with spell check because I'm so far off, it doesn't find the word.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious about, do you have an example of one of the spelling mistakes that you've made?
Years old.
Do you have an example of a mistake you've made, James, if you don't mind being forthcoming?
Just my writing abilities. Mm-hmm. I write better now, but it takes me a long time. Mm-hmm. And I've been writing things about events and things that I do, and my experiences, traveling experience and things, but it takes me a long time to get it right. Mm-hmm. And I'm just very slow at it. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, I've improved, but the improvement is very slow. But I'm good in science.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there are probably other people who would, you know, have a similar story, that they feel like they're good readers and yet they're struggling with spelling. And sometimes that's because there are specific things in your spelling machinery that, you know, aren't working as smoothly as they might. And we would need to figure out what they are so that we could really go in. You want your mechanic to fix the part that's actually not working, not just some other part. So we would need to really evaluate what's going on there so that we could really hone in on that and work on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that if we looked at your reading really carefully, we might be able to find that you're actually slow in certain aspects of reading, too. You read just fine. It's not a problem. But if we really looked at it sort of in the laboratory, we might find some little gaps in the reading as well.
Thanks very much for the call, James. And thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Rapp. We'll speak with our second guest, who won, was the winner in 2008 of the Scripps National Spelling Bee, and see if you can look at his brain.
Oh, I would love that. Thanks
okay.
so much for having me on. I really
yeah,
enjoyed it.
Thanks. It was interesting. We'll see if you would love that as well. So we thought we would have some fun this hour with all these Spelling Bee championships going on. I've always wanted to, in all these years in radio, speak with somebody who won the Scripps National Spelling Bee competition, and Samir Mishra did. He won in 2008, and he has just graduated from Columbia University with a degree in economics and statistics. He said that the Spelling Bee taught him a great deal, not just in spelling, but in life. One of the biggest things I took away from that was if you set a goal, you can achieve that goal. He competed nationally 4 years in a row. We'll find out what he did the last year that allowed him to win, and the kind of attention that he's received after winning in 2008. We're also going to have a contest, and the winner will get a Wisconsin Public Radio t-shirt. So we're going to give you a word in just one moment, and we'll do that as a separate thing. So we'll just go through phone calls until we get somebody. But if you have a question for Samir, now is the time. Wait just a few moments until we give you the spelling test, okay? All right. Samir, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hello. How are you?
Hi. I'm fine. How are you?
Doing well. Quite excited to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, our first guest wants to study your brain.
Well, I can say that it's not what it used to be back when I was 13, so it might not be as interesting from back when I was a spelling bee champion.
So you think your brain was stronger then? Why?
Well, I think studying for spelling is similar to training for any other sport you might imagine.
Oh.
Right? So, you know, you have to sleep 8 hours a day. You exercise every single day. You know, you eat a healthy meal. And that, luckily for me, was provided because I was 13 and I lived with my parents and I had an older sister. And they all kind of really helped keep me in schedule. Now that I'm, you know, 22 years old and living in New York City, I'm not sure if I have the same forces kind of, you know, keeping me on top of my regimen as closely as I did back in the day. So I'd say that's definitely part of it. But, you know, I think in terms of, you know, how my, in terms of when I was studying for the B, and this is something that we can talk about, is I used to study for hours every single day. So it's kind of like, you know, building up a muscle. You have to kind of flex it every single day to kind of get very good at it.
Yeah. So is it true that you went through the entire dictionary and found words that you didn't know and then wrote them down so you'd memorize them? The entire dictionary?
Yep, absolutely. That was my studying strategy. I competed for 4 years, as you mentioned, and the first 3 years, you know, I had the first year I placed 92nd or so, somewhere in that range. The second year I placed 14th, so I made this huge jump and I was very excited about it. The third year I slid back a little bit, went from 14th place to 16th place, and so that was kind of that break it point for me, where it's like I was frustrated. I was like, I'm trying a bunch of different studying techniques, but it's not getting me to the finish line. It's getting me really, really close, but it's not getting me there. And so I thought to myself, as I was about to embark studying for my fourth and final spelling bee, I thought, what is there left that I can do that I haven't done before? And that was basically just going through the entire dictionary and studying everything I didn't know.
But then you had to memorize all of it, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. And so I was listening to the conversation that you had with your first guest, and I think one thing that you guys were touching on towards the end about kind of writing things down really helps you remember something. And so, you know, what I did is I looked at the dictionary. When I found a word that I didn't know or didn't think that I could figure out on stage, then what I would do is I'd write it down. And I think in that process of writing it down and writing down its definition, the language of origin, that really helped me remember the word. And so when I was on stage and I got a word from that list that I had created, I could, when I was on stage, if I just closed my eyes, I could see the exact spelling of that word, the exact way that I had written it down in my notebook. Super clearly in my head, and I think that was really helpful for me as I was studying for the B.
But how many words, Samir, were in your notebook?
There were thousands.
Oh my gosh!
The B's dictionary, official dictionary at the time, at least on the cover, it says it has more than 400,000 words. I think 400,000 unique words, and so you know, I think I had probably known a good number of them going into that. And there were a good number of them that I think, you know, you can kind of figure out by being on stage. And one of my studying strategies was looking at Greek and Latin roots, right? So basically decomposing words and using the idea of pattern recognition to be able to solve a word when I'm on stage. And that really helped me by not having to memorize as many words, if that makes sense. So,
yes.
A word that ends in the root P-H-I-L-E, which means to like. You know, that was a helpful hint for me when I got on stage and I heard that ending file. I was like, oh, it's not going to end in F-I-L-E. If I can identify the root, I know it's going to end in P-H-I-L-E,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So you've just graduated from university.
Yeah, I just graduated from Columbia University in May of 2016. So I guess I'm coming up on my one-year reunion pretty soon.
And has all the spelling paid off in some way? Has your career fallen in line with spelling?
So I actually took a little bit of a diversion from studying linguistics, though I went to a liberal arts school. I went to Columbia, and so I think a big part of what I really enjoyed about my university education was how much reading was involved. And through the spelling bee, I enjoyed reading a lot. That was, I think, kind of what initially drew me in, which is kind of I just enjoyed reading a lot. And so I think that was a big part of my university education. I think personally for me, the strength that I came away with and the skill that I came away with from the B was really a skill of, okay, I know how to take a large amount of information and then compartmentalize it into my brain and then be able to kind of speak to that information and learn how to call upon that information. What I didn't think was as strong after coming out of high school was necessarily some of the more analytical, some of the more number-crunching numerical analyses. So I studied econ and stat for that reason, was to kind of basically say, well, this is a weakness of mine. Let's see if I can kind of get better at it over my 4 years. And I think to that extent, I improved a lot, and I'm now working in finance, and so I think that there's kind of a direct relation to that.
Mm-hmm. Didn't you ever get tired of studying all those words? You gave up going to the soda shop, getting a milkshake?
Oh, absolutely. All the time. I'm sure, you know, if my mom was here or my sister was here, they could tell you the number of times I tried to kind of run out the house looking to go play with my neighborhood friends. That was definitely, especially in the summer times, when the bee was the farthest away, was always a struggle for me, which was basically, you know, I want to go play with my friends. It's really beautiful outside.
Right.
And then kind of sitting inside and studying for the bee was kind of a completely different task. But, you know, I learned to balance a lot of it, right? So I would wake up at 7:30 in the morning during the summer and on the weekends during the school year, so I could kind of get my studying done by noon, and then I'd have all afternoon to hang out with my friends, and then I'd have the evening to spend time with my parents and my sister, and then kind of do that every single day. And so I think what I really kind of learned from that experience was, one, A, having to balance, but B, I was just like every other kid that wants to go play with their friends, and I was lucky that I had a really supportive mom and a really supportive sister and dad who, you know, would sit me down and say, look, it's totally fine that you want to take a break, but, you know, and just help me keep in mind my goals.
Right. What did you win? What do you win from the spelling bee competition?
You win a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's one, the monetary kind of, like, material prize, which is kind of, you know, you win $30,000 in cash.
Oh.
Which, yeah, as a 13-year-old, as you can imagine, with quite a windfall of cash. I think my first purchase with my money was an Xbox. So I was definitely very excited about that.
Right.
But you know, you also get things from Merriam-Webster and Encyclopedia Britannica. They send you kind of their full sets of books and dictionaries, which were obviously a lot of fun to kind of see and look at and read, and help me build my own personal library at an early age. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of the material things. But then you also get trips to, you know, L.A. And New York as a part of kind of your media tour.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that phrase, you know, your 48 hours of fame, I actually had kind of those 48 hours as I was kind of traveling across the country, meeting with Regis and Kelly at the time and Jimmy Kimmel in L.A. So I kind of had that experience where I, you know, got to meet the celebrities of L.A. and New York and have that exciting experience.
Yeah, that was great fun. And you still volunteer for the Spelling Bee.
Yeah, so I've been fortunate enough to be invited back by the Bee every single year since about my sophomore year in college. I think it's, you know, been 3 to 4 years now. And I actually work on the social media team. So, you know, the Bee has found my millennial status as an advantage, and that's something that I can help them out with. And so I am on the Twitter account for the Bee during the competition. So if you follow at Scripps Bee during Bee Week, which is coming up at the end of May, you'll see my tweets as I kind of tweet the competition live for the Bee.
We're going to welcome phone calls for you. Our phone number, and we're going to have a competition here in a while, but first we'll take a few phone calls for Samir, and then we're going to have a little contest, and we'll ask you to spell a word and see how you do. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And our guest won the Scripps National Spelling Bee Championship in 2008. Very accomplished young man, as you can tell. I bet he has one remarkable vocabulary. He has just graduated from Columbia University, a degree in economics and statistics, and is working in finance in New York City. So we'll take a few phone calls for him. And this is the Ideas Network. Samir Mishra is our guest. Samir, we have a little clip of you, and you may want to set it up for us. This is you when you had to spell a word. It was kind of funny. I think this, well, maybe you'll remember just from what I've just said about this then, a word that you thought was something that it wasn't, and then when you found out what it was, you were able to spell it. But this was, I don't know what year this was. You wanted. Was that?
It was the year 2008.
Oh, this is 2008. Do you mind if we play it?
Oh, yeah, no, please do.
Okay, it's kind of funny. Here's Samir.
Numbnut.
What'd you call me?
Numbnut?
What?
Numbnut.
Numbnut is a felt or sheepskin pad placed between a horse's back and the saddle to prevent chafing. Can I say it and then you say it?
Yeah.
Numna.
Oh, Numna.
Yeah. You weren't insulting me.
That's a relief. Language of origin, please.
Hindi.
Okay. Numna. Numna. N-U-M-N-A-H. Numna.
That is so funny, because all the other people in the audience must have been thinking, Samir, I didn't know what in the world that word meant, and here you go, oh, Numna, of course, Numna. I'm thinking, oh, really? I've never heard that word before. It's really quite a funny piece.
Yeah, no, it's funny because I think a lot of people credit me with the humor of kind of creating that situation. I think I definitely do get some credit for it, but, you know, in reality, I think I was just there on stage. I was super focused on wanting to understand the word. Mm-hmm. And it crossed my mind for maybe a millisecond why the word was so bizarre, the way I pronounced it. But I was so locked in into trying to understand the word that, you know, when all that's happening around me, I'm half of me thinking, why is everyone laughing? Am I, you know, do I look funny? Am I saying something? And then it's slowly dawning on me that, you know, what is the context of the situation and what am I being asked to do? That I think kind of just makes that scene and clip so funny.
Yeah, it is quite funny. So what about the pressure? I just can't imagine what it's like. You're a young person. You're 13 years old. You were 12, 11, 10 when you started these competitions. To have all this pressure on you to be able to visualize a word that you've studied thousands of them all in a notebook and you're trying to bring it into your head, how do you accomplish all of that without becoming a nervous wreck?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. It's something that even now when I look back, I'm still surprised that I was able to do it as a 13-year-old. You know, I think, you know, the way to go through it is something that my mom had always taught me, which is the three C's, which is to be cool, calm, and collected. And then when I was up on stage, what we had practiced, and, you know, I was lucky because I had 4 years of kind of going to the National B. That's 4 years of Regional B's, School Spelling B's, 4 years of Class B's. So, you know, at least 15 B's under my belt.
Wow.
Which was just really helpful to kind of have that sort of experience, you know, because, you know, I'm sure if you saw a video of me when I was a fourth grader at my first spelling bee, I would look a lot different than how I looked the eighth grade at my last spelling bee. But I think part of that is kind of, you know, when I was on stage, what I would tell myself is, you know, just imagine myself in a room where there's no audience, there's no one there, and it's just me, the pronouncer, and the judges.
Oh.
Just us in a room together talking about the word, as opposed to the sense of a competition.
Right.
And I think that was something that really helped me kind of power through some of those really stressful moments.
Hmm. Let's take a couple phone calls. Jackie in Sun Prairie, hi.
Hi, my question was for your first guest, but I have another one for your young man. I was wondering, as a child, as he prepared all of those years for the spelling bee, what kinds of things he was reading?
That's a great question. So I think my reading taste was all over the place. I loved fiction, and I loved kind of the fantasy books about, you know, warlocks and dragons. I love that stuff. But then I also say that I had this kind of really, I've always had this very deep interest in history. So those were reading biographies and reading kind of any sort of historical autobiography that I could get my hands on was something that I always really kind of enjoyed growing up. So I think that's kind of, I would say, the two places where I spent most of my time reading as a kid.
Hmm. So how often a day do you hear from people, hey, Samir, how do you spell?
Yeah, well, I have to say I'm lucky that I have a very good group of friends who don't who don't give me kind of who don't make fun of me for every opportunity they get. But you know, here at the workplace, you know, every so often, you know, somebody will be like, "Oh, this is why we hired you. We hired you to spell this word right now." And I'm, you know, and I'm more than happy to kind of step up to the plate when it's convenient for me.
Do you remember those words? Are they in your memory forever?
So no, I wish they were. I just what I realized even while I was studying for the B. Was that it's a lot of practice, it's a lot of repetition, it's a lot of seeing the words over and over again. That was what made me, I think, a really good speller, was just kind of, you know, the ability to kind of flip through some words and be able to kind of have them stick to my memory. And I would say that, you know, because I don't look at word lists anymore, and I haven't looked at word lists, you know, almost in the last 10 years, you know, that skill of kind of understanding the patterns and seeing the patterns has slowly kind of faded away, which is something that I think is pretty sad. But something that, you know, whenever I do see a word that I knew how to spell, but I, you know, don't feel like I know how to spell it anymore, I typically find that I'm very close, if not right, just maybe a couple letters off. And then B, it's always kind of fun to rediscover a word that I discovered once before and kind of relearn what it means and relearn how to spell it.
Yeah. Well, we have a word now. I think you were given this word, or somebody was given this word at one of the spelling bees. So we're going to have a little contest. And tell me, you should tell me the right way to do this. I don't know if I have all that's needed here. But this is the first person who can spell this on air correctly will get not a whole lot of money or a trip to Jimmy Fallon or Seth Meyers, but you'll get a T-shirt. You'll get a WPR T-shirt. Isn't this great? We don't do this very often. So it's the first person who can call in with the correct spelling. Now, I want to pronounce the word. Is that right? Twice, Samir?
Yep. Pronouncing the word twice is great.
What if there are two pronunciations for it? Do I read both of them?
Yeah, I would read both of them, in which case you don't have to repeat the first one. I would just do the first pronunciation and then the second.
Okay. And the word is Laodicean. Or Laodicean. Laodicean. Definition, I do that now?
Yep, definition's next.
Lukewarm or indifferent in religion or politics. It is a noun. And it just says, from the reproach to the church of the Laodiceans in Revelation 3:15, verses 15 to 16. First known use, 1633. Do you know that word? You would, wouldn't you?
I do. I actually do remember. It wasn't a word that I had gotten, but I think it's a word that came up in the National Spelling Bee, I think the year after I competed, actually.
Ah.
So I remember being, you know, me being a contestant, not a contestant, me being a spectator of it, you know, sitting at my home, you know, in West Lafayette, Indiana, watching the Bee for the first time on television in about, you know, 6 or 7 years. That was kind of a fun thing to see. And so I think that's why I remember the word, is that I just remember, you know, I remember that visage of me sitting at my home watching the bee.
All right. So whoever can pronounce that correctly first, be gay. If you want to call in, let's do it. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you win, we'll give you a T-shirt. So this is your very own spelling bee contest. And we'll go through calls as they come in. And just waiting for them to come in. So we can go, let's see if somebody wants to spell it. I don't want to go to another question for our guest until we figure it out. Well, okay, here's somebody who wants to participate. All right, Tracy, we'll go to Tracy. Hey, Tracy, you game?
Yes, I am.
All right, how do you spell it?
Okay, I'm going to guess here. It's L A 0. Oh, no, O, oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
L A O D I C A N.
Ooh, close but no tomato.
Oh, seriously?
I'm sorry, you were close.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Let's go to Michael in Waukesha. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, I didn't hear Laodicean.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear. No, I had it. I forgot it. Laodicean. Laodicean.
No.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I think you spelled it just the way Tracy did. Not good. I mean, not right. It was very close, but not quite right. 800-486-8655. Call in quickly because we are almost out of time. And We're just trying to, we're doing our little contest here, and the winner, whoever gets it first, will be getting a WPR T-shirt, which we will send. All right, let's go to Sonia. Hi, Sonia in Milwaukee.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. You want to spell?
Yeah.
All right.
Laodicean still?
Uh-huh, Laodicean.
Yeah. Laodicean.
You won! All right, Sonia, congratulations. I'm going to put you on hold, and Colleen will get your name and address. All right, thank you very much. What's the feeling like for you? We have about 15 seconds when you know you've won something, Samir, and you go, oh, great, I'm excited.
So I remember when I won, I immediately you kind of feel just relieved to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Because towards the end, as you can imagine, the pressure is building. But then...
Oh, I'll bet.
And then if you were there, though, in my hotel room 2 hours later, I was jumping up and down with the mattress. I thought it was like 6 p.m., but it ended up being like 2 in the morning by the time that... You know, I had done the first round of interviews after winning, and two in the morning, I had the most amount of energy I think I've ever had before in my life. So
it was a really
incredible experience.
What an experience in life! Thank you, Samir, so much for being with us.
Thank you. I really appreciated being on the show.
Yeah, it was fun. Samir Mishra, he won the Scripps Spelling Bee competition in 2008. Congratulations to Sonia. Thanks for being game, everybody. Thanks to Natalie Guyette for producing this show, to Colleen Duvall for on-air production. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. We'll be with you tomorrow.